welcome to Between Languages. I'm your host, Carl Gene Fordham, and today we are continuing our Words of the Week segment. That's right, we're going to keep looking at some of the recent additions to the Chinese and English languages, and I'm going to try to come up with some translations, but of course, if you have any suggestions, any better translations, please get in touch. My website is carlgene.com. That's carlgene.com. And I'm very excited if you can come up with a better equivalent in the other language. So without further ado, let's get started. We'll have a look at the first five Chinese terms and then follow that with five English terms. Number one, 鸡汤, 鸡汤. Okay, so we've got another chicken word here. We actually had one just a few episodes ago. That one was chicken baby. This one is chicken soup. So if your first language is English, you might be able to guess the direction this is going. What does chicken soup symbolize in the minds of Anglophones? Well, there might be different opinions out there. Actually, 鸡汤, this new concept in English, derives from an English book called Chicken Soup for the Soul. It was a pretty well-known book series that featured a number of inspirational stories. But of course, 鸡汤, in Chinese at least, has gotten a bit of a negative connotation. So if we describe something as having chicken soup, on the surface it might be a compliment, you might be saying that it's an inspirational story, but it could also be taken sarcastically. So it does have a cynical tone to it at times. So 鸡汤, which we know comes from the Chinese translation of that book series, right? 心灵鸡汤 is the name in Chinese. We know that it would refer to inspirational stories, right? That's fine, we all know that. What about the negative side? Well, funnily enough, we do have a similar expression in English, which comes from a word which appears to be from China, but actually is not. The word is fortune cookie. If you're not familiar with that term, a fortune cookie is a snack that is commonly provided in Chinese restaurants, not in China, but in English-speaking countries. Maybe other countries, I'm not sure, but certainly in English-speaking countries, and the US in particular, the fortune cookie is a snack provided. It's kind of like a biscuit, I guess. Inside the biscuit is a message that provides the person visiting the restaurant with some semblance of wisdom, right? Some inspirational quote or piece of advice or prediction even about your life. So fortune cookie, that's the snack, but it also has that sarcastic connotation. If you say, this article is just filled with fortune cookie comments, right? These fortune cookie comments could be exactly what we mean when we talk about 鸡汤 in Chinese, or indeed we have the word 鸡汤文, we add the character for article or language 文, 鸡汤文, which is more or less a so-called inspirational article, but one that contains useless content, basically, these fortune cookie comments. Number two, 看戏, 看戏. So this term is made up of the verb 看, which means to look, to view, to observe, 戏, which means drama, theater, right? A play, maybe. 看戏, or indeed opera, I should mention. 看戏 is, I guess, not really a new word in Chinese, but I've used this term to refer to a number of concepts in the Chinese language, and also a recent addition to the Chinese language, literally eating melon people, which I think is definitely worth discussing. So let's start with the original meaning of 看戏. We know is to see a play, to see opera, for example, to go to the theater, right? But its extended meaning is that you observe passively, right? You're a passive observer. You are what we would call in English a bystander, right? B-Y-S-T-A-N-D-R, bystander. That's, I think, as close as we're going to get in English to an equivalent, although I am curious to see what you guys have. Maybe there is some kind of idiom out there we could use to translate it. And actually, we do have an older word in Chinese, which I'm sure you're all familiar with, which is 看热闹, right? To watch the 热闹. And 热闹 is quite a famous word among Chinese learners because it's one of the first words we learn in Chinese that does not have an exact term in English or indeed Western languages. It basically means a scene which is bustling, which is full of energy, full of activity. It's got that feeling of, you know, eye-catching interest. You know, people want to watch it. So it could be, for example, a spring festival atmosphere, you know, letting off firecrackers, for example. In that case, we would watch the 热闹. But that can also be extended to this meaning of 看戏, to be a bystander in a situation or to stand by passively, to be a passive observer. And then now we have this new word which has come about. I guess it's only been in the Chinese language for a few years now, this idea of eating melon and just standing by, watching passively. The term, of course, is 吃瓜 as the verb, and then we have the people, the 吃瓜群众, right? 吃瓜群众, the melon-eating general populace, the masses who just stand by and watch passively. Again, I'm not aware of a specific English term that could encompass this, but we certainly do use the word bystander. It's an okay go-to rendering if you have no other options available. Number three, 佛系. 佛系. Okay, so we know the word 佛. This reading, 佛, only has one meaning, as far as I know. There's no other word it could possibly mean. For whatever reason, in Mandarin, 佛 only means the Buddha or Buddhism, right? 系 literally means system. I suppose here it means school of thought. Actually, I've never thought about it before. This is worth looking into, what exactly 系 means in this case. But anyway, I would interpret it as, you know, belonging to the school of thought of the Buddha, but specifically, it's more like Zen Buddhism. So you're part of that way of thinking. And what is the stereotype of a Zen Buddhist? The stereotype is they're carefree. They're very easygoing. They don't let things bother them, right? They're very calm, and they don't let things get them down. That is what 佛系 is at its essence. Now, do we have a word in English? Well, I would say we do. In fact, we have two words which are commonly used. So the first one is just the word Zen. So we should point out here, the word Zen actually comes from Japanese. It's the Japanese reading of the Chinese word Chan, right? Chan, of course, means Zen, right? Zen Buddhism. But in recent years, I suppose in the past 10, 20 years, Zen has become a very common word in English. And it just means you're very forsi, you're very carefree, you're very easygoing. We also have another word which is very common, which is chill, right? Chill. I should spell these words, shouldn't I? So Z is Z-E-N and chill is C-H-I-L-L, chill. So chill being a noun or a verb originally has now become an adjective, as is a common trend in languages. Quite often parts of speech morph over time and new parts of speech are added to old words. So yeah, 佛系, Zen, chill, they're two possible translations. Number four, 辣眼睛, 辣眼睛. So, 辣, we know this character means, what's the word? Hot, hot as in spicy, right? Like Sichuan pepper is very 辣, right? 眼睛, we know, means eyes. So it's like putting chili peppers in your eyes. It's that kind of logic. So it's stinging your eyes. But more specifically, we would use this word when you see something that is really not appealing visually. And I guess the closest we would have in English as an equivalent expression would be, in English we often say, my eyes, right? My eyes. It's like, you know, I can't take it anymore. This vision that I see in front of me is just so disgusting that I have to look away. That's basically what my eyes means. And it's pretty similar to 辣眼睛, although 辣眼睛 is actually a verb plus an object, but you know, it's a similar kind of thing. It's important to note that we do have the expression a sight for sore eyes. A sight for sore eyes. Sore is S-O-R-E, as in 酸痛 in Chinese. But this is actually very misleading because, ironically, sight for sore eyes doesn't mean 辣眼睛, it actually means something is a pleasing sight. It's a good thing. So this is actually the opposite of the original expression in Chinese. So yeah, it's important not to mix up these expressions. This is kind of like what I was talking about previously, this concept of the, what's it called? False friends, right? False friends is when you have an expression that is kind of literally what the original expression is in the other language, but actually they're very different in meaning. So don't confuse yourself. A sight for sore eyes is a good thing, whereas 辣眼睛 is my eyes. It's I can't take this sight. It's too much for me. We also have the expression what is it? Eyesore, right? E-Y-E-S-O-R-E, right? Eyesore. That's kind of similar. So if something is an eyesore, it means that it's very visually unattractive, right? Unappealing. That could be a possible translation depending on the context. Number five. 自媒体. 自媒体. Okay, so we know the character 自 means the self, right? 媒体, 媒体 means media. Self-media. Now, this one is quite frustrating for me because I feel that this is something that we should have an English expression for, right? This is definitely a common thing. But for some reason, it seems like we don't have a word for this in English. So literally, it's self-media. Sometimes we translate it as we media, as in W-E, we. But Yeah, these words haven't really entered the English lexicon just yet. So what is 自媒体? My understanding of 自媒体 is that it's basically where you have people producing articles or other kinds of media for the public, for public consumption. They're posted online. Maybe they have, you know, a popular following, a large following, but these are not official, you know, official media outlets, right? They're independent of the press, I guess. So in that way, it's kind of similar to, we have the term citizen journalist in English, but it's, I suppose it's broader than that, isn't it? So they're producing original content, it's not official, it's not from official sources, or it's not an official platform. But again, I think the word journalist in English, you know, it connotates kind of professionalism, whereas 自媒体, I guess, would be broader than that. Basically, anyone can be 自媒体. I could be a 自媒体, well, I guess I technically am a 自媒体. It's a very broad term, so it would include both citizen journalists and also content creators, for example, YouTubers. It would include basically anyone, an individual media creator, I guess. Yeah, it's difficult to translate, but I'm hoping that someone out there can find a better translation. Number six, red pill. Red pill. So yes, coming into our five English terms, the first one we have here, red pill, is spelt R-E-D hyphen P-I-L-L, red pill. Okay, so this is actually quite interesting. So do you remember, I think it was, what was it, 1999, 2000? Around about that time, there was a movie that came out, very, very popular movie from the US. Its English name is The Matrix, right? The Chinese translation, I think, was 黑客帝国, right? Empire of Hackers. It's a great translation. So, you know, The Matrix has become a bit of a modern classic, right? It's very, very popular. I quite like the film. The sequels are terrible, but anyway. So in The Matrix, if you remember, there's a scene where the main character has to choose between two different pills, right? P-I-L-L-S, pills, right? And so one pill would be the red pill, and the red pill will tell him the truth, right? It'll tell him the truth about the Matrix, whereas the blue pill, if he takes that pill, he'll go back to his life, his so-called fake life. And so this is where this term comes from. If you red pill someone, you enable them to understand reality as it is in all of its harshness, right? So this is actually quite a complicated concept. I do implore you to have a look online. You can look at the different ways it's being used, but in recent years, it's more commonly used in the context of far-right politics. yeah, it's a big topic. I'm not going to go into the specifics here, but essentially, red pill means you provide someone with information that allows them to see beyond their understanding of something. We'll put it that way. There is a literal translation, 红色药丸. But I'm pretty sure there would be some kind of idiom in Chinese to describe this, because, you know, I think for a lot of things, you can find a 成语, right? You can find a 成语 for most concepts. So again, I look forward to finding this 成语 wherever it is. And I'm also interested to know whether or not 红色药丸 has become a term in Chinese. From what I can tell, it hasn't yet, because I don't think The Matrix has this kind of you know, popular and cult following than it has in the West. But it's an interesting concept. There's also similar terms like blue pill and black pill, all these different colors. Again, they're worth looking at as well. So check it out, guys. I'd like to hear back from you about this word. I think it's a very interesting term. Number 7, anti-vaxxer. Anti-vaxxer. Okay, so anti, we know, is a prefix meaning against, right? Vaxxer is spelt V-A-X-X-E-R. It's an unusual spelling, isn't it? So vaxxer basically means, you know, vaccine, right? It's a vaccine with an E-R on the end. That's a suffix meaning person. So it is a person who is against vaccines. Now, with the vaccine for COVID-19 just on the horizon, I think this word is very topical. And indeed, by the time I post this, there should be a few countries already launching vaccines for the general public. So this has become a kind of movement, I guess, in the West. I don't know exactly what's happening in China with regards to vaccine, people's acceptance of vaccines in China. My understanding would be that the Chinese are pretty fine with it because you have to get vaccines throughout your life in China and people just get them. I don't think it's really a talking point in China, but in the West it's become almost political. And there is a segment of the population, I don't know, somewhere between 1% and 10%, who either disagree with vaccines on so-called philosophical grounds or religious grounds, or are worried about any side effects or any other problems with vaccines, which of course are unreasonable concerns, because you know vaccines are not given to the public unless they've gone through very rigorous testing and things like that. So anti-vaxxer has become a whole new movement in the West. From what I can tell, there is no Chinese word. I've got a paraphrase here. 反对疫苗接种的人. So literally, someone who is against vaccination, right? 疫苗接种, vaccination. So yeah, I just thought it was an interesting word. The spelling is also quite unusual. It's got two X's. Remember, we had a similar word in the previous lessons. Do you remember doxing, right? Doxing also has two X's, although sometimes it's written with one. Number 8, youthquake. Youthquake. So this word is made up of two words. Youth, which means young people, obviously. Quake, which means earthquake. So it's the earthquake of the young people. Now this word, I guess, it's been around for a while now. I think it was word of the week I forget which dictionary it was. It might have been the Oxford Dictionary. It was a while ago, and at the time it was quite popular. I think now it's kind of faded out a little bit, but I've included it here because, I don't know, I feel that it's still quite an important phenomenon to take note of. So youthquake is what happens when you have a younger generation growing up, right, and they're entering adulthood. And obviously, when you turn 18 or 21, depending on the country, you take on new responsibilities. You're voting, for example. You can buy alcohol, you can drive, and so on. And so, you know, they become, you know, new citizens, if you like. They become citizens of society. And so what happens then? Well, I think because countries around the world have been developing at such rapid paces that it feels like to me that each generation is so incredibly different to the one that came before it in terms of, you know, worldview and what they value in life and their political beliefs And so youthquake is referring to that latest, you know, younger generation coming through. You know, it's a shift, if you like. It's a shift in what they believe in what the tastes are of those younger members of the country. And of course, that new demographic changes society over time, right? And so, yeah, I thought it was an interesting term, albeit a little bit old. I think it's been around for about 10 years now. But still, I think it's worth looking at. The Chinese term is 青年震荡, literally youth quake. So yeah, that's another one I just wanted to add to the list. Hope you enjoy that one. Number 9. Cringe. Cringe. This word is spelt C-R-I-N-G-E. Cringe. This word is a tricky word. It's a very tricky word. You can see words like this, these short words in English, usually have very long histories. I'm sure this word has been used in a whole myriad of different ways throughout history. But I just want to focus on, I guess, two, you know, common usages nowadays. The essentially the original meaning, if you like, of the word cringe is when you shrink or cower or recoil. So this is in response to something that you're afraid of, something that disgusts you, something that embarrasses you. That's when you use the word cringe. Now, this is a podcast. I don't have video here to show you, but you can look online for some examples to see the kind of body language of what cringe is. But it's that kind of visceral reaction, that reaction to fear, disgust, or embarrassment. So we have the Chinese word wei suo, which, yeah, it's okay as a, you know, to translate certain original meanings of cringe. But of course, if you're talking about embarrassment, we would say something like, you know, gan dao gang ga, right? To feel embarrassed. I'm interested to know whether there is an equivalent in Chinese. This word has actually taken on new usages over the past couple of years. So cringe is actually a verb, but recently it started to be used as an adjective. So people would say, that's so cringe, which means that's so cringeworthy, that's so cringy, that's so cringe-inducing. Yeah, it's funny that it's kind of morphed into an adjective when actually it's a verb and a noun originally. Now, I'm from Australia, so, you know, I'm familiar with what's called cultural cringe. So in Australia, we have this specific term, cultural cringe, which it's basically the phenomenon where Australians have a kind of bias against their own cultural products or artistic works, for example. So we kind of automatically assume that, well, if the artist is from the UK, they're better than an artist from Australia. We kind of overlook Australian artists, for example, or Australian writers, Australian actors, or whatever, and go for ones from the UK or even Europe or the US, for example. That's called cultural cringe. That's an Australian-specific term. I don't believe it's used outside of Australia, but I just added it here because I think it's quite interesting. So that's what cringe. That's how cringe has been used in recent years. Originally a noun and a verb, but now increasingly being used as an adjective, that's so cringe, which means that's so difficult to translate. It's something which makes you feel so embarrassed. Something that just looks stupid almost. You would describe it as cringe. Number 10. Last one. Echo chamber. Echo chamber. So this one's become pretty common, I think. You probably already know this one. That's why I put it right at the end, because it's become so common. But it's definitely worth mentioning. I mean, it would be remiss of me not to mention it, just because it's taken on so much popularity over the past few years. So echo chamber, we know the word echo, right? Huisheng in Chinese, echo. Chamber here means room, right? It's a room of echoes, right? So echo chamber refers to a phenomenon where if you're in your, for example, your friendship circle, right? Your social circle, the people around you, right? If you only stay within that one kind of area, one zone, then you're constantly being told the same kinds of things every single day. You don't get perspectives from outsiders. So you've got a very limited perspective, right? That's essentially what echo chamber is. But of course, specifically, we often use it when we're talking about, you know, Facebook, for example. You use Facebook and your friends every day post very similar things, and maybe you're getting advertising as well, which is targeted at you because of the things that you're interested in. That also contributes to an echo chamber where your own beliefs, your own worldview is presented to you every day. It's confirmed over and over again, and as a result, your perspective it's narrowed, isn't it? Because you're not getting access to alternative points of view. That's basically what echo chamber is. And I think it's an interesting concept. It's certainly a real concept, and so it really implores us to, you know, try to make friends beyond our immediate circles and consider alternative points of view. The Chinese term is 回声是效应. So 回声是 refers to the room of the echo, then 效应 means effect. So in Chinese we call it echo chamber effect, because it is a kind of effect. Yeah. Okay, so there are words for today. I'll repeat them for you. 鸡汤, 看戏, 佛系, 辣眼睛, 自媒体, red pill, anti-vaxxer, youthquake, cringe, echo chamber. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode of Between Languages. I'm Carl Jean Fordham, and I look forward to hearing from you. If you have any questions or critiques on today's translations, or indeed new translations, I'm always looking for them, please get in touch at my website, carlgene, carlgene.com. And I look forward to seeing you in next week's episode. Have a great weekend. Cheers.